prosperity is one of those words that really defines the desires of many people today. So much so that quite often we transform gospel into all about prosperity. That some of the preachers that we see who market themselves to the masses so often uses gospel not as a means of God's blessing for those who are for the spiritual needs, but of a physical and material needs. And those things go pretty well. The churches that preach prosperity gospel seems to grow very quickly, and churches that try to be faithful to the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ tend to struggle in their growth. There is something about that, isn't there? That there is a desire for prosperity. And the fact of the matter is, even within a church that faithfully proclaims the gospel, we don't mind. We would love to be prosperous. Aren't we? I mean, that's not a bad thing. No one looks at prosperity as something that is evil. Something actually, quite often, we consider prosperity as a blessing. And so often, America, as it's been very prosperous over the years, one of the most prosperous nations the world has ever seen, would many of evangelicals and many of conservatives would consider it's because we are a Christian nation. However true or valid that statement is, the fact is, we do value prosperity. We all do. I do. Gotta pay my bills. I like to eat good food. It all requires some form of wealth and some form of gathering of that wealth and some form of prosperity that gives us that ability to enjoy life in some sense. Tonight's text, it's really about how true prosperity can come to a person. How we can be truly be blessed. It's a question of blessing that comes this text tonight. We have already looked at last time when we looked at chapter 30 and actually chapter 29 and chapter 30. We have looked at the prosperity God has brought to the womb, the wives of Jacob and the woman of Jacob. How he has blessed them in the midst of all the mess that they're in. About these four women, kind of jealousy and battle and fight and all the internal things that's going on at home. In the midst of all that, God was blessing them. In the midst of all the tears and pulling hair and yelling and screaming and scheming and fighting, in the midst of all that, what came out of that for Jacob and his family is 12 sons and one daughter, or 11 sons, excuse me, and one daughter. It is God's way of using what man has meant for evil to bring about his good and his plans. And his plan was to bless them. That he's the one who opened the womb of Leah, and then later opened the womb of Rachel, and Bilhah and Zilpah, and brought forth progeny, or ingredients, should I say, for the kingdom of God. A kingdom that is to be blessed of the Lord, but also to be a blessing to the rest of the world. As it is the promise that God has given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I will bless you so that you may be a blessing. Those who will bless you will be blessed. Those who curse you will be cursed. And that has been set up. He's been with children, abundance of children. He's been prospering, in end of chapter 29 to the first half of chapter 30. Now, 25 and following is about his material blessing, his material prosperity. Please understand that that as Jacob is in Jacob's home, there's all these battle between the wives. Jacob is going out and winning bread. Jacob has 9-to-5 job. He goes out in the morning, he comes in the evening, and he has to go through the battles the wives are going through. But in the midst of it, God's been kind of with him. God's been blessing him. So verse 25, as soon as Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own home and country. Here Jacob, after the last born, Joseph was born to Rachel with a certain promise of another son that is to come, that Jacob decides it is now about time that we return. I've accomplished my mission. My mission is accomplished. I have wives and children and sons. And he recognizes, maybe this is about the time I get to go home. He was weary over the work that his uncle was putting him through. It was not an easy time, as he had to serve his uncle. His uncle was known in many ways to be more trickery of a man than Jacob was. And you can see next chapter how he changed his wages. And it's not been a fair game here. And Jacob said, I'm ready to go home now. He's kind of tired, but also he has accomplished what he decided to do while he was there. And he said, I'm ready to go back to the promised land that I was to inherit, the blessing that I received from my father Isaac, that I'm ready to claim it now because I have now sons. And he's ready to go. And he goes to Jacob goes to Laban to tell him, send me away that I may go to my place, actually, and country. He makes that claim. This is my place, and I want to go back to my place. There's one place that he named as his own place, is that place called Bethel. And he says, if I return to this place, then I'll give a tenth of everything to the Lord. And in a sense, he's saying, let me go back to that place where I encountered God in a mighty way. Let me go back to my hometown where my fathers are. Let me return to where I belong. Verse 26, he demands from Laban, give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, that I may go. For you know the service that I have given you. Here, Jacob is not asking for permission, really. He's almost making a demand. He's ready to go. He's kind of fed up, I think, with his uncle, his father-in-law. But of course, he cannot, as son-in-law, he cannot be blunt and say, well, you're terrible. Employer, I'm going to leave. He doesn't walk away with 2 weeks' notice. He's saying, let me go. He's making his intentions known. In verse 27, but Laban said to him, if I have found favor in your sight, I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Here, Laban is thinking about this. I think Laban's been thinking about this for a long time. Ever since Laban had Jacob in his house, and he began to work for him, I think Laban was thinking about what's going on here. That what Laban really had when Jacob came was he had a very small and few flock. Matter of fact, you can see that he had few and small, because you can see that when his daughter, the second daughter, Rachel, brought her flock and brought it to the well, and Jacob is the one who pushed the well, and pushed the stone over the well and brought water for the lambs, for the sheep, and then they were able to bring the drink and take them back. That is not a proper or even a wise way of accumulating wealth, right? Because for them, it's the livestock that equals how much wealth they have. And the way they ran their business, if I may say, was the most inefficient way of doing it. They did it however they always did. And they didn't do it with a proper way of eagerness to accumulate wealth and to have good yield. That was not the way they functioned. Quite often they did it the old way. So one of the ways I think that Jacob brought here was certain wisdom of how to do things. He's seen his dad. He's seen his Isaac. He's seen his workers. He's seen how they've worked hard. And Jacob begins to implement, I think, certain ways of increasing the flock. And what Laban is seeing is that there is a certain sense of blessing that's coming his way. And another thing he recognizes, not only is Jacob a skilled man and a hard-working man, but also that he, because of him, he says, I have learned by divination or by experience in NASB that the Lord has blessed me because of you. That Laban understood that he's been blessed because of Jacob. Think of it this way. Laban goes out in the morning and he sees his flock. Now for us, flocks of sheep and goats doesn't really quite make sense to us. But when I was in Rwanda, the way they viewed wealth was by how many cows they owned. It was quite interesting. Because I knew of a man who owned 50 or more cows in his farm area. And you can see his land, and you can see how his pasture, and you can see his cows, and there's all over the place. And I remember when you go with him, he looks at his cows, and he's the most happiest man. He goes, he's kind of big dude, and he looks around, he's like, But what's interesting was he will not send his kids to school because that means he has to sell one of the cows to pay for his child to go to school. And he refuses to pay for his children to go to school because he considers his cows to be worth more than education of his children. Very fascinating way of looking at it. But for them, it's all about the livestock. A pastor's wife that I met, Janet, one time I was joking with her, and she was around these women, and I said, "Hey, Janet, so how many cows were you worth?" To my surprise, she was very pleased with that question and said, 5 cows. And I was speechless for a moment, and I said, "Okay, I gotta respond to this. Wow, you're worth 5 cows?" And she told me about the tales of how she married Pastor Patrick. And I thought it was so funny that her value was worth 5 cows, and that's her dowry, and that meant a lot. That is a lot in their culture, and that's the way they measured wealth of a person. Now, we don't quite understand it, but think of it this way. You have a land over there, a certain number of acres. You have a certain house, real estate, or stocks, investments, how much your net worth is worth. That's how we measure our prosperity today, don't we? It's a similar light. So what's going on is Laban looked outside, and he saw his wealth accumulating. He saw Jacob coming. He saw before Jacob's coming. And then he saw after Jacob's coming, and he see the graph just exponentially going up. And he said, something about this guy. And he can see Jacob is working hard. He can see and witness that. But he realizes that wasn't the only reason. He realizes there's something more to it. He realizes, aha, I am blessed, he says, because the Lord has blessed me because of you. He's making that connection. He had a good investor who was investing for him. And he understood that this man, I cannot let go. So he tries to make a deal. Verse 28, name your wages and I'll give it. He's making a deal. I'll give you whatever you want. I'll give it to you. You stay with me. You will help me get richer. You will help me to gain my prosperity. Verse 29, Jacob said to him, you yourself know how I have served you. How your livestock had fared with me. He's appealing to how hard he worked. He really did serve. It's a tremendous transformation in his life, isn't it? He was a man who was living in tents, scheming his ways to gain things. And in these number of years, there's some kind of transformation occurred that he realized he needs to work hard. He's a hardworking man. There's some change in him. He's no longer a trickster, but he's a hardworking, a serving individual, and he has served his father-in-law well. He took care of his livestock. And then he reminds Laban, verse 30, for you had little before I came, and it had increased abundantly. The Hebrew word here, it's like it broke forth greatly. That's the idea. He's saying, when I came, you have very little investment. And then I came later, it's like you made an investment in Tesla, and it grew 800%. That's the idea. Your wealth just burst forth when I came here. And he appeals to the fact that is how it happened. And then he says, the source of that blessing is that Lord has blessed you wherever I turned, or wherever my legs, my feet went. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also? He's saying, look, when I came, you have very little. But I came, I worked hard, in midst of it, God blessed you because of me. And he says, now it's my turn. Now it's my turn to be blessed by the Lord. Now it's my turn to be prosperous. I think the fact that he had his children, 11 of them, had brought forth a recognition that he needs to start to gather his own wealth. I think that that recognition started to begin to dawn on him. And he realizes, look, I cannot live like this anymore. I have to provide for my family. My children are growing. They're becoming young men, and I need to provide. And he recognizes his own needs. It's a real need, isn't it? Now, I don't know because I'm not married, but when you have children and they begin to grow, they eat more, things are more expensive, it's no longer just diapers, they need more things, and then you got to think about college and education, and there's so much more that goes in raising a child. And here, this man has 11 of them. And he's saying, I need to do something. It's a real issue, real needs that needs to be met. And he's thinking and contemplating. And in the midst of it, he recognizes it is God who has blessed him. It is God who has blessed Laban because of his sake. And he is now ready to receive his own blessing. Verse 31, Laban's listening to this and say, why are you telling me all this? And he says, well, what do you want? What shall I give you? Verse 31. And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Now, the story gets a little bit complicated here. But the idea is this. He says, hey, look, there are sheep and goats that I've been taking care of. You see these, Laban? Now, they're the dark ones. They're the white ones, white sheep. And then there's some with the speckles and kind of messy ones. And they're goats. And they're the dark-colored one. And there's some with stripes and speckles. And he tells him this. He says, Laban, this is what I'll do. You don't have to give me anything, but this is what I'll do. I'm going to earn it. He recognizes it's better if he works because God blesses him for his labor. And he tells him this. You take away all the speckled ones, all the ones that are really rare to get. You put them all away. And then you give me all the ones that are one colored one, white ones and the black ones, and I'll take care of them. And in midst of it, if anyone is born in midst of these flocks that are striped and speckled, then I'll keep it. I'll keep them. They will be mine. And all the other ones, you get to keep it because that's yours. It's an incredible deal actually for Laban, because please recognize that they're farmers. They're herdsmen. They know how genetics works. They may not know the details of DNA and how genes are transferred and phenotypes and alleles and genotypes. They don't know all those things, but they know one thing. Things bring forth after their kind, as in the creation narrative. People knew that already. People knew if you have a white sheep and you mix it with white sheep, you're going to get a white sheep. If you get a dark goat and you mix it with dark goat, you're going to get a dark goat. They knew that already. So what Jacob is really saying is this. I'm going to ask for a miracle here. I'm going to look for something that is not supposed to happen. He's saying, you take all the ones that is supposed to be mine, you take them away and put them away. All the speckled ones, all the striped ones, you take them and put them aside, which Laban does. And all the ones that has one colored one, give it to me. And in midst of it, if any of them brings forth speckled and striped, they are mine, because that is God's doing. How can you take away what God has given me? You see. So Laban thinks about this and is like, hey, that's a great deal. I'll take that offer. Matter of fact, I may not even have to pay anything to this man. If Laban is thinking about what's going on, he will say, yeah, it's a great deal. Matter of fact, he is so surprised. He says, verse 34, good, let it be as you have said. Actually, the Hebrew word is behold. Let's do it. He was so happy that Jacob would make such an offer. The counter offer Laban received was actually a great deal. So they set up that plan and they decide to go with it. And they separate, and Laban's sons take the male goats that were striped and spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, and everyone that had white on it, every lamb that was black, put them into charge of his sons. Verse 36, and he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob pastured the rest of Laban's flock. Isn't it interesting? They're 3 days' journey away. So they cannot even come and mix somehow. So Laban and his sons and their flock is here, 3 days of distance, and here's Jacob and his flock. Here's an interesting thing. Jacob does something interesting. And I think this is what's supposed to be kind of like a funny thing, I think. Because they all know, everybody knew, okay? I think quite often we think ancient people were kind of not bright. That's how we normally assume these people are. But they're not. They're actually very bright and smart people. They knew life much more than we think they do. They fully understood that the striped ones are brought forth by striped ones, and then single-colored ones are brought forth by single-colored ones. If you have white sheep mating with white sheep, you're going to get a white sheep. If you get a dark goat mating with a dark goat, you're going to get a dark goat. You're not going to get speckled nor stripes. Everybody knew that. There's something about that they already understood. It doesn't take genius to see it. That the child looks like their parents. That the offspring looks like their parent. They understood it. So what Jacob is doing here, he's thinking, how could I get some striped ones? How can I get some speckled ones? He's thinking, how could I do this? And he thought, maybe if I do this, maybe this will happen. So he begins to, what he really does, he makes a picture, an image of stripes where the water is. And his idea is when sheep or goat come to drink water, and that's apparently where the copulation occurs. That's where the intercourse between the male and female occurs, in near the water source, which makes sense. That's where they're gathered together, right? Without water, they're scattered around, and they come together to drink. That's where they have that relationship. And in midst of it, he realizes, if I want a striped one, I'm going to put striped one in front of them. If once they're looking at it while they're having their relationship, it will bring forth that striped one or speckled ones. Now, everybody knows, please recognize this, Jacob is not stupid, and ancient people are not stupid. They know that this is not going to really work. Please understand, that's what makes it funny. That's what makes this story so interesting. It's not supposed to work, but it seems to work. That's the irony of it. The irony here is that what is supposed to not work is working. And Jacob is kind of excited, and he realizes this works for whatever reason. So he realizes, hey, I want a stronger one. So whenever stronger ones are mating, he puts it in front of them. Whenever the weaker ones are mating, he puts it away. And the idea is that he is being blessed, not because of his own hands, even though you recognize he is working hard. He is paying attention to all in each one of his flock. He's paying attention to make sure that they breed properly. He is paying a great attention to his flock. He's working hard. But in midst of it, he recognizes this is not really, should not work, but it is working. Matter of fact, it works so well. Verse 43, thus the man increased greatly. The Hebrew says, thus the man, it broke forth greatly, greatly. That's the idea. Much, much. And had large flock. And interestingly, it wasn't just large flocks, but it's female servants and male servants and camels and donkeys. Everything in his life. There was a great prosperity. There was a great blessing over blessing over blessing. He would have said, my cup overflows. It's an interesting story because the way it is preserved here is right after the sons of the 11 sons and one daughter is born and given, right after that, or should I say in midst of all that, God's been blessing him throughout all of his life. In midst of all that, God was blessing him wherever he was going. In midst of all the mess that's going at home, his work was going well. In midst of all the mess that's going on, whenever he goes, I'm sure he was one of those guys that's like, I really don't want to go home tonight. I'd rather stay with my sheep. Could well be. In midst of all the mess in the background, that God was blessing him through all that mess, in a similar light, in midst of this conflict between his father-in-law, the blessing is now given to them. The reason why Laban was being blessed was because of Jacob. And Jacob is being blessed here. And here is an interesting line he tells his uncle, actually, while they're making the deal. Look at verse 33 with me. He says this. So my honesty will answer me for later when you come to look into my wages with you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be counted stolen. He says something interesting here. It translated, so my honesty will answer me later. In Hebrew, he says, so my righteousness will answer me later when you come and look into my wages. He is saying this. Please recognize a change in this man's heart. He was known to be a trickster. He was known to be a deceiver. He is known to deceive his brother. But all of a sudden, he appeals ESV translates as my honesty. King James translates as my righteousness. It's the word righteousness here. That he's appealing to his righteousness. He's saying, look, there is some transformation that occurred in his life. The reason for his blessing is because of his righteousness. And he's saying, I'll do this. I'll do and work my portion. And if I am dishonest with you, if I'm trying to trick you and steal something away from you, then I should be punished for it. That you should take all of that and more. But he's appealing. Look, I'll be honest with you. I'll no longer trick you. I'll no longer fight you. I'll no longer resist you. But my honesty, my righteousness, let it answer you. Let my righteousness, let my goodness in this sense, let that answer you. Let that be an answer to you. What's going on in Jacob is his heart has transformed into such a way in the midst of his life. I don't know how it occurs, but so often our lives do change, don't we? We recognize that often. If you look back before you're coming to the Lord and growing and maturing, I can say for myself at least, if you saw me 10, 20 years ago, you said, oh, that hooligan, that idiot. But I look back now and I'm like, yeah, I was one. And I realize I came quite far. Part of me still feels I'm still the same man that I was. But then there's a certain recognition, I've changed. I've grown over my lies and my trickery. I've kind of matured in a little way. Now, it's not that I've arrived, but there's a certain recognition over the years looking back in all the difficulties of life or just living in this broken world. You can see a sense of your growth, and that's what Jacob is seeing. And we can see that Jacob's life is transformed. That after that Bethel event, and as he's living and struggling, and the brokenness at home, brokenness at his work, in all of that pressure, and all of that suffering, has turned this man to turn to say, my righteousness will answer you. He's saying, my honesty will bless me. He is saying, he's turning and saying, the Lord will bless me because I was righteous before his eyes. That I was no longer a trickster, but I've grown in my righteousness. That I've matured in this fashion. Isn't it quite true that quite often the sufferings we have in the past are the very fire that refine us and purify us? As we are his workmanship, the way God purifies and cleanses us is through suffering. Through suffering. Through suffering. It's quite fascinating that is what Genesis story often portrays over and over and over. Abraham's life, Isaac's life, Jacob's life, or even look at Judah's life. It is that suffering and the brokenness and the shame and all of those things intertwined brings forth a good work that God has begun, continues forth here. And it shows us, now, Jacob is not perfect. His righteousness is not perfect. But indeed, he is able to recognize something more, that being righteous, there's a great gain. Being godliness, there is a great gain to that. And he recognizes God does bless those who are righteous before him. God is God of justice and righteousness and goodness and truth. That he blesses those who are righteous before him. He pours his blessing over those who live according to his law. He pours his blessing over those who live rightly before his eyes, obeying his commandments. Matter of fact, that was the very promise God has given to Adam, that if you obey me, you can have the tree of life. That's the same blessing that God has given to Abraham and Isaac. If you walk rightly before me, I'll give you blessing. It's only those who are righteous can be blessed before the Lord. That is just the condition of who God is in his justice, goodness, and truth. That is who God is. God blesses those who are righteous. And indeed, those who are righteous should be blessed by the Lord. But here is the problem. Here is the issue, isn't it? Why was Laban blessed? Laban was a wicked man, wasn't he? Laban was not a righteous man. But recognize this, that Laban was blessed because of righteousness of another. That Laban here was blessed because of Jacob. Jacob was somehow the source of his blessing. And that's really the confession that Laban makes. I was blessed because of you. Whenever Laban will go and lay on his bed and look at his prosperity, and he looks to the heaven and he says, "Why am I blessed?" The answer for him was, "Because of Jacob. The Lord has blessed me." And I imagine when Jacob lays on his bed and he's being blessed, matter of fact, exponentially blessed, things are bursting forth. It's like wells are breaking forth and waters are being poured out. That's how he was blessed. Abundance over abundance over abundance in all areas of his life. Not only flocks, but female servants and male servants and camels and donkeys. He's blessed over and blessed and blessed. And the real question I think Jacob is also asking in the night is this: why am I blessed? Why should I? Because the reality is Jacob is not really righteous as he wished he was. He's growing in righteousness. But his same trickster, you can see in the next chapter, he tricks his uncle and he runs away. He takes it away. And the fact of the matter is, Jacob himself does not need to be blessed. He cannot be blessed because he is wicked. His righteousness is not sufficient, should I say. But the reason why Jacob's blessed beyond measure, beyond what he should be blessed by, is because of the righteousness of another, isn't it? Because as God has said to Abraham when he was about to slay his own son, that it was imputed to him for righteousness. It is in a similar light, the righteousness of another was placed upon him, that it is not Jacob, but Jacob's son, one of the sons that was brought forth in chapter 30, Judah, in the line of Judah, that there is a son that's born to him that will bear their righteousness for him. That it is the righteousness not of Jacob but of his son that is imputed and granted to him. The one who is pure at heart and perfect in every way. The one who served most diligently the will of the Father. Never swayed left to right. He have given all that he had for the sake of his Father. And he gave it all till his end. And for that righteousness, here, Jacob is blessed because of that son that is to come. See, I think Jacob did not fully understand the fullness of the blessings that he is to receive. He did not fully understand. Let me put it this way. That the patriarchs and the saints and the prophets, they understood the gospel in certain ways. You can hear it in Jacob's narrative, in Isaac's narrative, in Abraham's narrative, in Noah's narrative, even Enoch's narrative. You can hear a glimpse of that gospel and the way they're trying to understand as First Peter talks about how these men of old, they looked to Christ and they were looking for him, the time and the way in which the righteousness of God would come. They looked for it and they could not see it. And here, Jacob is seeing a glimpse of God's infinite blessing in a physical form, in the wealth and the prosperity he's receiving, of something of a spiritual nature. And the significance of this is this. God's blessing for you, church, is not physical or material any longer. That for Jacob to see God's blessing in his life was wealth and health. For Jacob to recognize God's blessing over him is a land and health and children and abundance of it. That's what's demonstrated in chapter 30 so far. But the true wealth that we receive as Jacob is looking at his physical prosperity and thinking of considering the spiritual prosperity God has given to us in midst of our suffering and misery, true spiritual blessing. That is Christ himself. That Jacob did not fully grasp that the Son of God would come and become a man and become one of us and partake of our brokenness and bring us himself, Emmanuel. Jacob could not fully grasp that in that sense. But he knew that there is a seed that is to come. He knew the seed will come and break forth greatest blessing and pour that upon us. And we have the fullness of that blessing. Even if you do not have a physical prosperity, when you look at the cross, when you look at the cross and the misery that Christ faced in his poverty, that we receive the greatest blessing of all, spiritual union with Christ. And so Ephesians chapter 1 says, Paul says it this way, you have received every spiritual blessing in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. What Jacob saw physically, we saw spiritually at the cross of Calvary, that he has, because he became poor, that you became rich in Christ. Because he was cursed on the tree, that you've been blessed beyond measure. That blessing has broke forth before you, and Christ has poured that spirit upon you, and you are more than blessed than all of the old saints. You are truly blessed in the Lord. Let me end with a final thought. Sometimes we don't feel like we're blessed. You know, sometimes we don't feel it. Sometimes we don't think it. Sometimes we are full of grumbling and anger and we're full of it. I am. You know, I got a shot today. Tomorrow I'm going to be sick. I'm going to be grumbling all day. That's how fickle we are. That's how fickle we are. But when you look at the cross, but when you look at the finished work of Christ, it's a reminder to you over and over and over and over. Your baptism and the Lord's Supper is a reminder to you over and over and over. When Christ says, do this in remembrance of me, he is reminding you over and over and over. He is cursed, so you are blessed. And you don't even know. We don't even fully grasp how much we're blessed, church. So encouraged in the midst of your suffering, in the midst of your struggling to be faithful to the Lord, to grow in your righteousness. There are times in the midst of our suffering, we say things we shouldn't have said. We thought things we shouldn't have thought. In the midst of it, capture every thought captive, knowing that Christ is cursed so that you are blessed. You are more blessed than anyone else on this side of glory. Because Christ is risen and Christ has blessed you. Let us